You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
Here we go.
Rolling.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Fat Gatsby's Triple Radio. This is Tim. That's Dave. That's Weiss.
Hey.
I don't know if this is our September episode late or our October episode early-ish.
October.
It is currently.
Now I'm a little hot, so I got to back off.
Hey. Now it's October 6th. That's when we're recording this. So correct. I don't know if we're going to get another one in this month or it'll be early next month or what.
September was my bad month, but we'll see.
Yeah,
how you guys are.
Well, how long's your show go till, Dave? Dave's in a show right now.
I'm in a show right now, which is my availability is very limited. My show is another 2 weeks, so the rest of this week and the rest of next week, and then it's done. It's half over at this point. Four weeks of this show, a performance.
Oh, okay, nice 8 week run. Yeah.
It's, 6 shows a week. It's,
fuck, really? Six a week?
6 a week. Yeah. It's a heavy, it's a lot.
It's a heavy, yeah.
Well, two of those are the same day, right?
And we have one double show day on Saturdays. So I've been like in the mode of having to not only just
you're
take
like a
really
70s
good
pro wrestler.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's
exactly
towns,
what I was going to say. Except
you're not going between the towns. You're just doing the shows.
It's great. It's a lot of fun. It is physically painful and like difficult for my voice, so it's just a lot of it's working real hard and then just absolutely crashing Monday and Tuesday as much as I am able to and still do the voiceover work that I have to do.
I was going to ask, are you still doing voiceover in between? So that answers that one.
Not that I'm like seeking it out. I am not seeking it out, but I'm obliged to do the stuff that, you know, drops in my lap. And so, I have to actually go to a studio tomorrow for a studio session, which I haven't done in a while. But that also means, someone else is doing the production work. So that's nice.
Yeah, that's nice.
And Weiss, you have also been very busy with some pretty amazing stuff
going on. It was wild. I had a twofer because I thought it was just going to be, I was helping a friend of mine. Well, I edited their short since December, and that made it into Fantastic Fest here, which is a big film fest. That was one of the reasons I moved here. That's why in 2013 is what got me here the first week and went like, oh, I could deal with Austin. I could deal with this heat in September. This will be fine. And that got to play to 4 sold out shows. I'm told I only saw the first of those.
Awesome.
Paired with a super fun, campy queer horror flick called The Cramps, a period piece, which was a longer version of a short that had gotten around that people had known about, but they had all come down from Louisiana and it was super cool feeding off of like their energy. Yeah, because it was their first feature, so like they're all pumped to like see this. They were shocked that they were in the fest in the first place, so like they were super grateful and
it's really cool
feeding off all that energy was nice. And like it was a twofer because the film fest theme this year was high fantasy and I happened to work at a fantasy tavern, so we ended up doing a few different events, but the big one was we were a big part of their closing ceremonies as the person who runs quests at the tavern that I work at. We did an enormous non-linear event at Robert Rodriguez's Troublemaker Studios, which is just fucking 2 miles down the road. It's just in town that nobody, really notices, but it was on the
somehow because it looks incredible.
Oh yeah. No, the detail work. So that set is what it's dressed as right now is Battle Angel Alita. It's the Battle Angel Alita set. If you look up a clip on YouTube of them playing like street ball is what I sent to people is like, this is the best sense, especially like once you've been in that space and you're like, oh my God, that's every wall. that we were around. It's just like a big city block, mm-hmm. but they've used that set since Sin City. So like pretty much everything in the 20 years that's been like in one way or another dressed up. And there's like a bunch of like Robert Rodriguez's like cars from the different productions, like the Death Proof car, a trolley that I think was from Spy Kids and all this, like on the walk in and stuff. But
amazing.
Yeah. No, it was super great. We got like all our actors and our musicians and some of our other people in there to kind of just like do. Yeah, as I said, like we kind of spread out and were doing our own basically mini games that bit led to a larger battle, as well as the musicians were playing. And that was one part of there were other people there, but we were kind of like the main. And the nice thing was like, you know, these people paid a lot of money to go to a film fest. This was kind of their celebration at the end. They had no, they just got an address. So they had no idea what they were even being like dropped off to.
Really?
So it had like a nice wow factor for the most part, as well as a, you know, we made it optional because also, you know, you saw 20 movies in a week. You might not want to use your brain too much. Yeah.
But I mean, I have no doubt that everyone that went there must have been absolutely blown away because like the pictures and videos that you sent us, just holy cow.
it's wild. We had our photographer there, so all those pictures turned out awesome. Look, it was kind of a twofer because they do a lot of work with Draft House.
Okay.
But like there's just a couple of those areas that I'm just like, is this from Once Upon a Time in Mexico? Is this Desperado? Like, there's a lot of those, like...
What am I seeing
now? Yeah, because they were burlesque dancers that I... They're not ours, but they're people, like, we work with. But they were, like, up on, like, a bridge on one of the buildings.
Oh,
in a,
wow.
You know, like, if you were walking past, you can picture in that kind of setting.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of, like, spots like that. So... It was super cool. Yeah, I couldn't even tell the cast for while we were setting it up for a long time. So we were doing like our regular quests at the tavern, and I'm just like, I got something. I'll tell you in a couple weeks, I guess. Oh, you know, sort of thing. And some of those people aren't like movie people, so I had to like sit down and be like, well, this is what Fantastic Fest is. No, it's actually like it's the biggest genre fest in the country. Actually, it's a big festival thing. You'll enjoy it. It'll be a good time. Like, and everybody killed it. Like,
I'm sure.
The thing. It's like, you know, it's had the pleasure of being in charge of a lot of people that have various degrees of performance, but in, you know, if it was a business, you would call them soft skills in some sort, you know, like whether it be LARPing or tabletop or direct performance or whatever, but just basically being like, no, everyone's bringing like a very unique character that in a lot of cases they've kind of been for a long time, like through the tavern. There was only a couple that we made up for like this quest specifically. Mm-hmm. And also we made it dog shit silly. So, which is,
well, let me ask
was,
you.
I was happy that the dumbest suggestions were not my ideas. Like, I was just sort of like, oh, I would have said that thing. That makes me feel happy.
I have no experience with this kind of like live activation performance style. And so what I feel like as a performer would throw me off would be just being in that space for the first time and like having enough time to sort of get to know where everything is, where I'm going, where I can take people. How much time did you have for the whole cast to practice in the space beforehand?
We never got to practice in the space. Okay. We did get to walk through with them once. We were trying to get them in more. It didn't happen. But you know, I was happy that on very short notice we got everybody except for one actor in, I believe, on it was like we were told late Wednesday that we could get in Friday afternoon in the middle of the day. So it was just sort of like, okay, whomever's free, come on down.
Yeah.
But the nice thing is because me and my boss and one other person went down there the first time, and then they basically like left us there to brainstorm. So we brainstormed there on the set for like an hour or so.
That's great.
And that was great. And we got to like see where everything was.
You need to be familiar with the space, you know, too, yep. enough at least to know like what is useful to us. What can we make use of here?
Exactly. And we kind of made like the second time there's artists with better memories than me that literally like sketched out a map as best they could for everybody to kind of like picture. And, you know, it was basically just finding like nooks and crannies that would like work best mm-hmm. for whatever bit, you know, because most of us were individual, but a few people were working together. I wanted to wander around. I didn't want to be in one spot, sort of thing. I was, somebody said a very Charlie Kelly character, is how I come off, which I was happy about that. Yeah. I'm just like, perfect. No, I mean, I was still my, cruelty-free vampire character that I do regularly at my tavern, but I just pictured them as, which is just Cat from Red Dwarf, but I literally pictured them being spit into this universe, into a box of wires. So kind of making fun of the cyberpunky thing. Like I was literally covered in like the oldest wires that I could find sort of thing. Just a kitty cat bouncing around. But everyone had like a different energy. And I think that, like that's kind of what gave it a lot of juice. So
yeah.
Not everybody doing like one thing, you know, but and yeah. And you know, most and besides us, there was like pop-up tattoos, like Fangoria was there, a whole bunch of like other stuff. You know, some people didn't even see us. Some people didn't even know there was this whole thing was even going on. So
crazy. Just looked amazing. Yeah. Must have been an incredible time.
No, thank you. No, it was super great. And besides closing, we got to go like, honestly, I had just as much fun. The theater has a bar next door, which is like a large entertainment space. Like they do karaoke upstairs. They have a stage for like performances and stuff. And like they asked for performers for like a midweek dance party. And I'm like, am I a person who dances? No. Is my character a person who does? Yes. Okay. Then I will go. Like, sure. I will.
Is my character?
Go on down.
Yes.
Yep. I literally would not have gone if it was not. But
that's great.
It was a great time. Patton Oswalt walked by and gave us a look, and
word.
You know, it's whatever. It was a fun time.
That's awesome. But
I didn't get to see like I was hoping to see more stuff. I think like between like I was still like working and also no car and all that stuff, so I didn't get to see too many movies. But what I did get to see is Angel's Egg, which I think I've talked about on here before, but do you guys know that one off the top of your heads?
I don't think so. No, that's not ringing any
bells. So in 85, this fella named Amano that you might know did this anime with the guy that directed Ghost of the Shell. Okay. Yeah, so they, it's like a 50-minute feature that you couldn't see unless you pirated, but they just did a 4K release. So this was the premiere of like the 4K restoration, and the thing is just fucking gorgeous.
Nice.
So definitely it is getting a one-day theatrical run, I think, in November. So if it pops up, like definitely like it's a short movie, yes, but
it called? Angel's Egg?
Angel's Egg.
And this predates Final Fantasy by a good 4 years or so?
The first Final Fantasy was like, what, 87? I mean, I think it does predate it, but not by too much.
God, yeah, that's Yoshitaka Amano, all right. Good Lord.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's clearly, and it's, not only, like, because I believe, that was a Tomie. The Ghost in the Shell, and it's like a lot of the, you know, stuff that made 90s anime what it was, like just doing an art piece early on. And it kind of looks like Mobius art in a way, like it's dystopian. It has like insane sense of scale.
Yeah.
So definitely cool to see in the theater.
So G Kids is distributing this. So presumably they paid for the restoration.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, there is a disc coming out as well. So for people like me that buy those things, but if you can see it in a...
Someone seems to
like I do believe it is getting...
Might come to HBO November, in the US.
November 19th.
November 19th.
Oh. Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome.
That was super cool. And the only other thing that I got to see was... so they have a program through the Draft House I didn't realize that is a school for film composers. And what they did was they got a bunch of restorations of old Max Fleischer cartoons.
Wow.
So one, you know, like the best, like these gorgeous old restorations. And they had a live string quartet do new compositions for Fleischer for like 8 Fleischer cartoons.
Wow.
So I was like, if I'm seeing anything, that's the thing I'm going to see. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's hugely ambitious.
And like they were mostly really good. And like even the one that I would say wasn't like a knockout was like they made a point of talking about he had to take like a bunch of notes and like had one day to change everything, and like his teacher was talking about how like he took notes way better than he did because these are all like 18 to 22 year olds that are like doing these compositions. So no doubt at least one of them will be going on to do things, if not everybody through the school. So I definitely like started following like it's not Green Hornet, but it sounds like Green Hornet. Okay. I don't have the name handy.
some high flying trumpets going on there.
Yeah.
But it was dope. Did they attempt to like match the contemporaneous style of the of what the music would have been at the time?
Some no, like there was a couple, like they ended with the Superman, like the Mechanical Machinations, kind of the known Superman one, and that one was a little more experimental, which was interesting. They tried only the Popeye one. They left in the sound effects and let that and the dialogue.
Okay.
Whereas all the others were like silent.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they started like they flat out did like Into the Inkwell for like the first two. So Coco the Clown for like the first two or three. They did a Betty Boop. Popeye Superman one.
I mean, now that you think about it, probably the original music is obviously they don't have the ability to separate the original music from any voice tracks. It's all baked in. So,
well, this, I mean, like through the magic of digital,
right? Yeah, you'd have to use some AI tools to extract the clean.
It
dialogue.
Does make it easier, but you can even you've been able to do it for a while. It's just like it's a little easier to do it now. It's crazy because you can just go like, oh, that sound is this, that sound is that.
Yeah. 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 I, in my experience, it's not always reliable. Like when it works.
No, correct.
And when it works and sounds like magic, you're like, holy shit, this is magic. But it, you know, it depends so much on the source material and how much it is able 100%. To extract from. So because I've had to do it. I've had to try to do it myself. Yep. And it is, you know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. But
like the Popeye one just drove me nuts because it was one I actually had on tape, and like he's humming a song to himself in the picture, so like I know what that music is. It's just him going da, 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 and you can see him like doing that, but since the music's different, I'm just sort of going like
like that's interesting,
cool. I don't remember what the Fleischer was called, but it's the one where the two poor kids are dreaming of like this, like all the food that they can eat, and then they wake up and like the bakers of the town give them a bunch of food.
Yeah.
But like it's one of the I was like, oh, they're doing this one because it's if you watched or played Cuphead, but especially if you watched the Cuphead cartoon on Netflix, the thing with Fleischer's From 1930 to 1940, they specifically did this thing called the stereoscopic method, which I still think is like the prettiest thing in animation, where there's like multiple layers. Think of it as like almost like a Mohn 7, I guess, but or it's parallax,
yeah,
but
sure,
like
yeah.
it's scrolling with the camera because it's on a model set.
Yeah.
So like hugely detailed, like actual, what looks like actual like diorama food in the background with the animation in the front and like different layers spread out and such. It's crazy.
It must have been amazing to see a beautifully restored version of that. That's awesome.
Yep.
Well, hey, so
yeah,
that was
about it. Confessed. What'd you see?
I saw the re-release of Jaws, the 50th anniversary.
Oh,
Jaws
nice.
Release,
oh,
all right.
Fuck yeah.
Which ticks off, I think.
Good movie.
Well, yeah, good movie. I was gonna say. I think this ticks off like one of my. Like top 10 movies of all time that I had never seen in a theater.
I thought you had. All right.
No, I don't think I know to my, I, yeah. I never saw in the theater.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. And I took the kid to go see it. And I just knowing him, I gave him fair warning. I'm like, okay, look, kid, there's a scene at night when they're investigating a boat. You just need to close your eyes because the movie will be done if your eyes are open during that scene. I described to him what happened. And I was like, you know, if you want to look, like, you know, you can look, but this is what happens. And that's like the one jump scare of the movie when Hooper's investigating the boat and like the corpse comes flying out and its eyeball is like dangling.
And this
movie's rated PG because PG-13 didn't exist in 75, which it certainly would be a PG-13 by today's standards for multiple reasons.
I don't think that was till Gremlins, if I remember right. It wasn't till like 84.
Yeah. So, you know, as soon as they were out like on the water at night, he was like, close it up. He was like done. And just kind of any other scene that came up, he's like, you know, Dad, does this person die? And I'm like, no. He's did Jaws get the dog? I'm like, you know, it's never really stated. Probably, maybe, don't know. Dave
trying to get his focus. I know. Yeah.
Just
wipe it off with your fingy. That's what I do on my phone anyways.
So, yeah, he did end up, you know, enjoying it. He didn't think it was like the best movie ever, but that's fine. He enjoyed it.
It doesn't have to. And can come back to it.
Yeah.
I guess similarly, I had a friend get me a ticket into, because they were reshowing Shin Godzilla in theaters. Man, so, yeah, I got to see that.
I was too busy.
It was cool. I don't have much to say about it, except it's more prescient than it felt even at the time.
That one's really stuck with me. Yeah.
Like, yep. I mean, two of the best Godzilla movies back to back. Like, I know it gets buried by -1 at this point, but like, Shin Godzilla, man.
No, I don't know. It kind of did at the time, but I feel like it popped back up. Well, this must be like the 10-year anniversary or something, I'm guessing.
Yeah, probably.
So it kind of went back into people's minds and people are thinking about it again.
Yeah. Especially there's been so much Evangelion stuff since Shin Godzilla 2 that like it's hard not to like watch that movie and just be like, yeah, oh my God, this is such an Anno movie. Like so much of the things he likes, and I haven't even seen all of Evangelion, but I'm just like, yeah, I would love to see him do more in the live action space just for that.
Yeah, when we were in there, we saw trailers because they're re-releasing Back to the Future for the 40th anniversary. Sure. They're re-releasing Apollo 13 for the 30th anniversary. And I was like, okay, sure.
Yeah, sure. No, it had an audience, but also I just think of it as like a dad movie that everybody had on VHS.
Yeah, it was just like one of the when my dad got like a de-scrambler box so we could watch like all the movie channels. Over and over again. That was one of the movies that was like playing on, you know, just like that and Twister just constantly. Yep. But, you know, hey, anything theaters can do to get people into the theaters to see movies.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, I'm whatever. I'm down with it. I got to see Jaws on the big screen.
Exactly.
For the first time. That's a, you know, beautifully shot movie.
I've never seen Back to the Future on the screen. I would love to see that.
Me either. Yeah. I think that's next month, I want to say.
It makes sense. 85, of course.
Yeah.
That's the easiest movie to ever remember when it was made.
Yeah. The only other movie I saw, which you guys talked about last time, was Naked Gun.
Yes. Did you like
it? I did enjoy it. Yeah. Quite a bit. Yeah. It didn't like blow my ass off or anything, but it was a really good time, and I appreciated the music.
Blow your ass off.
I'm not saying like, oh my god, it was the funniest movie I've ever seen.
Right.
But it did. I thought it paid good homage to those movies with the type of humor that it was peddling.
Yeah.
Surprised at the amount of pro wrestlers that showed up in the movie.
That was I didn't say anything last time because I didn't want to like spoil that. I wish it was a little less WWE and a little more or a little less, but boy, Cody Rhodes getting the pops.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he's about to be Guile.
Exactly.
Any you know, Batista is beyond WWE.
Oh,
you know,
Batista I'm happy about. Like Cody Rhodes, I was just like,
I was kind of surprised. Well, you got actually three wrestlers, I should say, when you include Paul Walter Hauser, who had a
yes, of course.
Have you seen his death match against QT Marshall?
No.
Okay, yeah, I haven't seen.
Yeah. Like,
it's free on YouTube.
Okay, great.
Also a good show. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you should keep watching after that match.
I've kind of given up right now. I was too far behind. But I will jump off of Naked Gun into
And the snowman scene was the best part of the movie. That was fucking hilarious.
Snowman scene was great.
Yeah. Not just because it definitely helped that I knew who was in the costume, but that was
insane. Really did.
It really did.
Yeah. That was extra funny to me.
Yes.
But not for the kids, but if you happen to see the new Toxic Avenger, I really enjoyed it.
Okay,
it's really fun. It's so it's Macon Blair directing, mm-hmm. who's an actor I really like. He's been in things like Green Room and Reservation Dogs. He's in the Lowdown and all that. He's directed. He directed one movie before this. That's the Elijah Wood starring vehicle on Netflix with a long title that I don't remember, but it found a really nice middle ground of like, you know, clearly it's somebody who knew the trauma stuff and is doing some trauma jokes, but is also kind of doing the stuff that he thinks is funny.
Mm-hmm.
And for it getting into a theater in the first place, I'm just like, I'm seeing a Toxic Avenger movie in the Regal. This feels weird already to start with. Kind of a few different like Austin-y ties into there. That's like cool. Macon Blair is kind of from here. And Lietti, his wife is in there, who's just a phenomenal actor at this and improviser and stuff. But I think it's a really good time, and I hope people see it.
I had seen mostly positive feelings about it with a couple of opinions stating that it just either it was not as faithful to the original, either to the original film or just the original trauma style as they had maybe hoped it would be.
That's going to be what you're like. It's not straight up trauma, but it is playing with a lot of like it goes goofier than I expected it to go, which I was happy about. Yeah. Like it doesn't go full. That's why I'm saying like it is a hybrid in a sense.
Well, it's gotta be.
Even if it doesn't, it has to be.
Yeah. And you can't full trauma in 2025 is an anachronism, you know.
Correct. Like and there's so many trauma movies that you can go back to and watch if you want. Trauma, there's
they
at
still
least
exist.
Four Toxic Avengers, if not five. I don't know if they made one after Sizzon. You know, like it's playing with like the ADR jokes and stuff like that. That's really fun. The trauma's really good with. And like as I think it was smarter for it to be like, oh, okay, it's pushing buttons, but it's also like the fun of an independent movie is like, oh, you find this funny and you're gonna put your ass into it and just do like this joke to the nth degree and just see what happens. Like even if it falls flat, like it's fun to see them like go for it.
Yeah.
And like Dinklage is amazing. It's Peter Dinklage.
Beautiful. Well, I think that's what people... I think the best that you can hope for... Not the best. I think the best that you can hope for is that it will be a great, spectacular movie in its own right. But
yeah.
I think
what
you really hope for when trying to capture someone else's comic sensibilities from decades ago is to... what I want to see in that kind of thing mostly is as little interference from the financial people as possible. You know, that's what you want. Like, at least like, okay, maybe this is not what I hoped it would be, but I definitely get the sense that they were allowed to make the movie they wanted to make.
Yes, that's a great way to put it.
Leashed
and that is
anyone poo-pooing these sensibilities and be like, oh no, I don't think audiences in 2025 are gonna like that. No, we can't do that. That's what you don't want to see, I think, ultimately.
Well, and that's why it took so long to come out, because I believe this has been done for a bit and they've been like fighting for it to get to theaters. Probably money backed up. But however the back end, it just feels like the movie they wanted to make.
Perfect.
And also, I thought it was funny. So
even better.
There is that, you know. There's a couple things at the end I wish that they could have thrown a little more money at. But, like, besides that, it was a good time.
Excellent.
Another good time, I saw Nobody 2, which I've talked about before. I was looking forward to. I really enjoyed it. And very similarly, this is the one, like, the only complaint you're going to have is from people that really know Timo's other work and don't feel like it went far enough, which, fair, but also, like, again, it still feels like he got away with a lot of stuff, and the action, to me, is way better than the first Nobody.
Oh, really?
Which, I liked the first Nobody, but I had, like, the choreography I thought was, like, all right. Like,
sure.
I liked what, like, Odenkirk can sell it.
Yeah.
You know, he's a good actor. Like, he can make, like, an okay scene still really fun. But this one opens and you're just like, okay, that was your promise right there. it feels like Indonesian action flick, which is what they're going for. It felt a lot like I kept thinking he should do a Dead Rising movie. Like the way that he's using props for like action pieces, like kind of that look of Vacation. It's Indonesian action National Lampoons is what it is. Like it's family goes on vacation. There's comedy with, you know, like, you know, that this is a hitman who does not want to hit right now. Things pull him in. There's, you know. Christopher Lloyd pops his head in silly for like a bit. Yeah.
That's
Christopher Lloyd is his dad. So, you know,
beautiful.
That alone.
Yeah.
I think the movie rules. Like,
I really liked the first one, but always felt like a sequel was kind of unnecessary. But as long as it's it's more of the same and it's fine that it exists, but it also exists in a world where Bob Odenkirk is even more of a prestige drama star, having with a successful run on Broadway. Like his sort of legit actor bona fides are well and truly secured now. So while the first one kind of felt like, oh, this is just a fun lark for a guy that's got a little bit of heat on him now, and he's too old to be doing this, you know, this one almost feels like. I don't know what I'm trying to say about it, but it is in a slightly different place in the world in his career.
Yeah, a little more with the fun of the juxtaposition of that, I guess. And also, like, you know, the best thing about John Wick 4, like, the only John Wick that I really, really like is the first one. Like, I liked 4. I thought 4 was a good time. And I liked one fight in 2 I thought was awesome. I didn't like 3. But, like, 4 is good because you're watching Keanu and you're going, like, oh, my God, he's 60. Like, that whole... And, like, he leans into it. And I think Odenkirk is really good about that, too, where, like, that's a lot of the fun of this, where you're just sort of like, wow, he's doing that. He is an older actor. Shit. He's taking a hit, it looks like. Even if it's not, like, on, you know, you're like, he's taking those rules. He's taking some bumps. sort of thing.
But also knowing that he's having the time of his life doing it. Like, every interview 100%. Is always just like, this is the most fun I've had in years. Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought this one was goofier, too. Like, there was one line that, like, was a throwaway line that I thought was, yeah, I kind of wish all of... The second I heard that, I was just like, oh, no, go back and do another draft and just center on, like, the timing of this. Of just him, like, kind of almost like background lines during a fight sort of thing. But, nah. We don't get enough, you know, straight-up action movies, let alone, like, action comedies right now. So yeah. If you need, do it. I guess for... Did you say anything else, Dave?
Alien Earth.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll go to TV.
Yeah.
I've finished, yes.
I've had no time for movie. Unless I don't think I talked about The Roses last time. I feel like it's been a long time since we did a podcast.
Is that the Cumberbatch Olivia Colman one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Olivia.
With Kate McKinnon and Andy Samberg supporting.
And Nkuti. How was Nkuti?
He was Ngakoue. Just a very small supporting role. He's kind of always there, but doesn't get a lot to do. Got a couple of fun lines, but underused, I think.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't have much to say about it. It's a delightful romp.
Hey, that's all it needed to be. Like that's what I was like. I wasn't running out to, but I was like, cool. Yeah, like a marital distress comedy with a bunch of actors you like.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But also I think for a lot of this movie, I think you're sort of wondering like this again. It's a remake of an older movie in which the sensibilities were different and a lot more of that sort of, you know. And even this is another generation removed, but the sort of Tracy Hepburn, you know, yapping at each other, I think played better a generation ago than it does today, certainly. And so you sort of have to really start out by showing a couple that honestly does love and respect each other, like genuinely.
I see what you mean.
And then and then it's a puzzle figuring out how that falls apart. And that was very smartly crafted and did require the acting chops of a Cumberbatch and a Coleman to sell it as plausible, you know, because it is, that's difficult to puzzle out. You know, how am I going to plot out the decay of what should be a good, respectful relationship between people who really do seem to click?
Yeah. No, I'll definitely give that one a shot.
Yeah. That's all.
Hang on, did K-pop Demon Hunters infect your house?
We haven't talked about K-pop Demon Hunters yet?
Not with you.
Oh,
because you hadn't seen it.
Yeah, we had ours.
Me and Weiss had seen it, and we, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and you were like,
it had only grown in ever since.
Yeah. Somehow it has continued to grow, yes.
It was part of our midweek dance party.
It is the musical of the year. Best musical I've seen.
Yeah.
Legit, it is a fantastic musical. And I was having this discussion with my, you know, now theater-minded kids about how a good musical, the songs in a good musical succeed when not only are they good, hummable songs, you know, in and of themselves, but also they exist to further the plot. A musical with songs that just happen to like, no, let's just pause and sing a song here, and it's that song is its own world, is lazy musical writing. The songs in a musical need to further and advance the plot because they represent a feeling or an emotion that is too larger than life to be expressed through dialogue.
Agreed. That's generally like the way people that don't like musicals, like myself, but sometimes yourself, will make fun of them, where it's just like, oh, you're just singing a song about a hat.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
I am impatient for the song about a hat. This does not further the story. I could not give less of a fuck about this hat. All the songs in K-pop Demon Hunters are important. They are all necessary. Yep. They need to be there. And they're all bangers.
My soda pop, baby.
I never know. I can never decide which one I like the best. I'm pretty sure it's your idol, but honestly, this is how it's done. It's creeping up there.
Yeah.
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 No, and it looks great. Like, it is Sony? Just infected.
Yep.
Yeah. And it got over with your girls as well.
Like, gang. Oh, yeah.
Instantly. Oh, right. No, they were very resistant before.
No. I don't think they were resistant, but Dave, you said that there was reservations because they had identified it as, like, weeb material.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, and especially my 13-year-old, for whom this almost seemed like, oh, this is starting to encroach upon being, like, a big pop culture thing that, like, everyone loves. But I think I'm probably too cool to enjoy it. She loves it, too. I mean, it's impossible. Yeah, no, it totally won over everybody in the house.
It is hard to be that guy. I don't know if I've met that guy. I'm sure that guy's out there. But it's just like...
Well, I was going to say, like, I'm kind of that guy. I was like, I'm a teenage girl about that. Mm. Absolutely, everyone. Well, because that was the thing when it was like... global phenomenon, and I'm like, uh-oh, I tend not to like global phenomenons. Honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, really. You saw it before. It's weird to say you kind of saw it before it really took off. It was already really when we spoke in like August, it had been out for a month and it was like already really popular. Yeah. But like since then it's like, you know, topping Billboard charts and
and
being forced into SNL sketches.
Yeah, Bad Bunny introducing the vocalists on SNL 48 hours ago.
Because, you know, NBC is just like, well, you're in America doing our show anyways. Get over there and do something on SNL.
Yeah.
That cheap pop.
Yeah, I haven't actually watched that yet.
It's not a funny sketch, but...
No. they did it because they could.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
It was... that movie is still crazy, and I think about that music a lot.
No, for sure. I mean, we just
listen to it a lot.
Yeah.
Karaoke night at work. You know, like, it's a given that somebody is going to do it for karaoke now. Like, it's an instant karaoke song because you know everybody's going to know it and love it and sing along. Instant hit. Instant hits too often.
Yeah. It has only been replaced in my house over the past 48 hours by Taylor Swift's new album, which, Tim, I've been having an ongoing discussion with your wife over social media.
You're trying to dissect kind of a mess it is.
I was going to say, did one of you like it? Because I don't know one human being, and I know many a Swiftie at this point, that is sad and reeling right now.
Weiss does not know one human being.
I do not. No, not one that liked it.
At this point.
Even the kids love it. And sure. Jan is struggling.
Really?
Jan is feeling a big injury because I think she likes it enough that she is starting to quite, when she's seeing all the bad reviews and bad takes about it, she's being like, wait, is there something wrong with me that I like it? Whereas the kids are just oblivious. The kids love it. They're singing it all the time.
Sure.
I don't think it's very good.
I haven't heard a single thing off of it.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Step off for 10 years and come back like Madonna or Cher with like a techno album.
You just released another album like 14 months ago. Take a little time.
Yeah. Quickly with movies that I had, I don't have too much to say on Fantastic Four, but I did see Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't like through the roof, but like it was quieter than I thought. Mm-hmm. Like in... both in like audio and like a little sparse, but I did like a lot of what it was doing too. I really liked Julia Garner's Silver Surfer. That was cool.
Eben Moss Baruch would be my reason to see this. I haven't seen it, but he's my reason to see the movie. How much
did great.
is this a good Ben Grimm?
Yeah, it's a good Ben Grimm. I can't compare it to... Probably. I didn't see the other ones. I literally avoided all of them except for the ridiculous one they made fun of on Arrested Development. but, no, my hardest sell with Fantastic Four is always Johnny Storm. I feel like he's a hard character to get right and to write and to make me like. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was the closest, at least.
Yeah. He's not like over the top like Johnny Storm, I guess, as you usually picture him in your mind. Like, I think I mentioned when we talked about it. It's like, oh, he is also smart and trying to figure things out and kind of underestimated by everybody because, yeah. Reed is so smart and Sue is so smart, but he is also smart.
Yeah, on the writing side, they did the smartest thing, which is to give him the B story of, you know, doing the manual labor, doing the investigation stuff, yeah. and like kind of earning his brain power sort of thing. I thought that was a good idea. Yeah. And off of the Julia Garner, I did see weapons, and I'm going to be one of the few people that does not like, I don't like Zach Cregger. I liked Barbarian a little more. But I think I loved the first half of Weapons. I thought he did such a good job setting stuff up, and I'm not going to get into like super spoilery, but like, so far he's 2 for 2 where he wants to subvert what feels like to me just to break structure. And it felt like he took all of the stuff he set up, put it in a little drawer, put that off to the side, got distracted by something else that most other people really, really enjoy. And I, you know, got the idea very quickly, and I wish that they would have just let us discover it in the moment instead of literally dragging it on for like a half hour. And then they go back to the characters that we set up. And I was just like, oh, yeah, you guys. Like, right.
You've done a great job of talking around the plot point.
I was trying. It's hard. Yeah.
No, I understand. And though I have not seen the movie, I feel like I get exactly what you mean about, like, it seems like, well, I couldn't say it better than you just said it. I feel like I get you.
Yeah, it's, you know, like, you kind of get the idea, especially if you saw Barbarian, like, what he's kind of going for. And again, I think it was, I was madder because I was so into what he was setting up that I was just like, wow, they did really, like, again, Julie Garner and Brolin and a couple other characters. I really enjoyed their relationships. They were setting up the world of this small town. Like, they, you know, you've seen the trailers. That's your, you know, your hook is the kids have gone missing. They all ran away in the middle of the night. But then, you know, like, the town itself is much more interesting. Like, and taking the time to kind of explore how people know each other and all that stuff. And I would have loved to have seen that movie continue.
It sounds like what you're saying is that the all of that setup carried so much weight that got wiped off the board.
For me, it did. I think, like, when it takes a shift, a lot of people enjoy that shift, which in Barbarian, when it took a shift...
A shift should, like, acknowledge the weight of everything that got set up before, though.
Yeah, I think there's weight there, and it wasn't like it was out of nowhere, but there were seeds, so it wasn't like, I don't know. It's kind of hard to dance around that one. Like, Barbarian was a hard pivot. It's been long enough that I don't mind saying that. Like, Barbarian is literally doing one thing, and then it's a joke. It's the guy from Whitest Kids You Know. Like, it does a hard cut to what feels like a different movie. Like, and the audience laughs and we're going, what the fuck is happening? Like, and then it finds its way back in what I thought a little more organic-y. And maybe this is one of those things too with Weapons, because I'm not going to talk about, I would be giving away the movie, but like, I have in my head a way that I think it would have been way more satisfying to just be like, okay, we get it while the action's happening. And as an audience, we would have been like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Versus literally sitting us down for a half hour to like it make it more like
showing versus telling, right?
A little showing versus telling, a little just being, you know, as I said, I think like, part subversion, part gratuitous as a joke, which sometimes I'm into. In this case, I was not. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
And again, like, this is one of those cases where, like, the world loves this. That you are going to see a ton of this for Halloween. You're going to see Naruto running all over the place. there is a costume that will be, even if you haven't seen the movie, you will be like, oh, it's from that meme. I didn't realize that was from this.
Public consciousness in a way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It already has. So I don't know. Like, I fool me twice at this point. So I might be sitting out for Zach Kreger's ones, but if you see it, let me know.
Yeah.
Cause again, it's because it's playing for comedy too. Like, it's so subjective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dark comedy, but comedy. Yeah. 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 Let's get to Alien Earth. Talking about dark.
Whew.
Yeah.
I have heard people say that Alien Earth really fumbled the ending.
I was going to see how you felt about it too. I liked the ending. So.
I liked it too.
Yeah.
I guess if anything, I would say that it did feel like it kind of wrapped up rather hastily. Like, by the time we got to the penultimate episode, I was like, okay, I'm ready for there to be three more. Oh, there's only one more.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Which
I was kind of happy because I knew going in it was eight, and I was like, interesting. Like, I love limited series, even though, like, I also, it did feel like quicker than expected. Like, it's a weird ground because I was just like, I guess nine would have been the happy spot. But I also don't like how a lot of these shows feel stretched out. So I was going, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I feel like everything that they did in those final two episodes, I could have used another hour of that, I think.
That's, yeah. No, I agree with
that. I could have used basically a 3-hour, you know, feature length ending to this series instead of a couple of 40 minutes.
I did love that last scene or two, though. Like, I thought that was really fun.
Yeah, but no, I think it was a good place to get to. I wish that there was a little more time to get there. That's my only complaint. Not where they went, but how we got there.
Yeah.
Just felt too rushed.
Yeah. And I was going to say, I don't have much to say on it either. Like, the basest version of that, I saw a lot of people just wanted more of the Eye Spider. And I'm like, we all want more Eye Spider. we love it.
Well, especially like,
but it was fun.
Yeah, I think there was a tease that we could at some point. That's the Chekhov gun that we're going to see that Eye Spider get into something that can speak.
Oh yeah,
you know that's
well. That's I love playing with that tension too, though.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was desperate for that tension to be relieved. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, it's a fucking Noah Hawley playing with the elements of menace that he is an expert at, the quiet, slow burning menace of people, and then the danger that other people present to each other that is very Harold Pinter-esque, if I can make a theatrical reference.
One that I can actually get. but
you're very
he's, you know, it's broadening the universe and also the key question of like, what is alien at this point, playing with not only like synthetics but hybrids and like, you know, a lot of you know, the danger is always going to be more human than monster, but like, how do we do that in a new kind of interesting way?
I am right now, having finished the series, I am now watching a little James Cameron film written and directed by Jimmy Cameron called Aliens that I have never before seen in my life. Because the only alien thing I have ever seen is the original film.
Now, are you watching the theatrical or the director's?
Pretty sure I'm watching the theatrical cut.
I might recommend depending on how you feel. There is some stuff at the beginning that is really, really good from the director's backstory stuff. But the rest of the stuff that's added in is, you can kind of go like, more of good things. But like, there's some story beats that I think are totally worth like going back for if you're feeling like watching more.
I'm gonna have to double check and see what version I'm, as far as I could tell, it was the only version available streaming that I could find.
Okay.
So I might have to seek those out on YouTube those director's deleted scenes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because what's funny is that at least so far, I'm only about halfway through it because I'm watching it 25 minutes at a time on the elliptical machine.
that's motivating.
Well, yeah, no, and it's not that I dislike it. I like it in the sense that it, I mean, but it's just funny to me how it is a James Cameron action film. Like, that is...
I mean, it to me, it is... I love T2, but I think I saw Aliens first, and it kind of more imprinted, and it's
okay.
That is the one that's the blueprint for me. Well, I guess like it was that and The Abyss. I saw a lot, like T2. I think it was one of those things where like my parents didn't knew what T2 was, where they didn't know what the other things were, and I could also watch them on PIX or you know.
Opposite for me, so, T2 is sort of my default bog standard James sure. Cameron action film.
And it's comparing great thing to great thing. So
well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. yeah. Yep. So that's what I'm seeing. But it just feels like such a different beast from what released, you know, from what Scott now what Noah Hawley has done, because
yeah,
I don't know, for me what Noah Hawley's take on it almost feels like the definitive take.
Interesting. I mean, like it's the third best one to me. Sure. I mean, like those are the three movies at this point. Like I don't have that's hard to even like, I'm just like, I haven't played Isolation. I haven't played, I guess, like some of the. I'm sure you could make an argument for like some of the games that are more fun games.
Oh, sure.
Like your Alien Predator or whatever. But I mean, like, I don't know. I have a soft spot for 3, 4 is a mess. You know, you got your Alien Predator movies, which I only saw the second of. Mm. And then there's things I like about Prometheus. There's things I like about Covenant. There's stuff I like about Romulus.
I'm sorry, seen Prometheus as well. That is the other alien movie I have seen.
It is the dumbest scientist in the world.
You know, and despite I still found myself liking it. And I liked it because of the themes of transhumanism that I think are...
Yes.
Yeah, you know, that's...
Yeah.
What I think is interesting. And that's the only thing I feel like is missing from Aliens right now, because I've seen... Because that has been a consistent through line through all of the Alien movies I've seen. is the theme and of loss of humanity through transhumanism. And so
I'll keep in mind two of those were Ridley's as well, you know, like Prometheus is Ridley Scott. Yeah. I mean, 3 and 4, like 4, I can never remember. Resurrection, I can never remember the specifics of.
I was going to ask, what is the subtitle of that one? I don't know.
Yeah, that was Resurrection. Alien 3 is Alien 3. It's the one that was Fincher, so like I can picture a lot of like those shots. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, 3 was Fincher, 4 was the person that did Amelie. like they're all great directors. It's just a lot of different this or that. Yeah. I was glad I didn't know Hermit from Andor. Other things.
Oh.
Andor, yeah. So
And the end of the fucking world. That's the first time I saw him.
Oh, that's okay. Never saw that series. One too. Yeah.
That's you would like that, I think.
Yeah, that sounds
I think Netflix only... distributed that exclusively in the States. But I'm sorry, you were about to say.
Oh, no, the only other TV I was going to throw in quickly was did your kids or either of you guys watch Owl House by chance?
My kids did. Show? I have not had the chance to watch it with them, but I'm pretty sure my kids love it.
So I didn't watch Richard all watched of it. Too. Yeah, it's a very good show. And then so the follow up to that from Dana Terrace is a show called Knights of Guinevere. Now, this is a show that's
because I follow a lot of the voice actors involved with it.
I was curious about that.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's a straight up an adult animation show. They say shit like 1,000 times, being put out on YouTube. So you can watch it for free. The pilot's out now. I'm waiting for more episodes. through a company called Glitch. That's they do there's an amusement park show that I think is very popular that I've just seen imagery from.
The Amazing Digital Circus.
That's yeah. That's the one. But yeah. The animation is phenomenal. Okay. And it's I'm really into just like the very high concept. It's future high fantasy, like amusement park broke down, like a couple it's very space truckery. It feels like a 90s anime space trucker kind of thing. Like it's a couple a couple schlubs find a like couple friends that are schlubs. One of them's like a garbage worker. She's a likable thief, takes home a broken maquette from an amusement park, and there's like more to it than that, but like the designs are really good, and it's it really impressed me. Like when I heard it was like being distributed like through YouTube, I was like, okay, passion project, they're gonna do the best they can.
That's exactly what I thought too.
Yeah, and I was just like, no, like that's there's like animation is like top tier, feels like right now. So hopefully it's not just the pilot, but yeah, fingers crossed for that one. That's good.
Thank you for filling me in on that show's pedigree, because that's having learned from it through a couple of the other actors that I follow, I was like, oh, okay, I'm glad you're proud of this. The little YouTube pilot trying to, you know, because the amazing Digital Circus was one of these projects that like, yeah, caught a lot of heat. Like I shouldn't say caught a lot of heat. That makes it sound like it did something bad. No, I mean it found
had momentum.
Yes, got momentum, found an audience quickly.
Yeah.
And this seemed like it, you know, for a very sort of independently produced thing. And also really did not seem like my cup of tea. And this seemed like same thing, but I had no idea about the connection to the Owl House, and that will definitely pique the interest of everyone in my household.
I was going to say, watch the trailer. Gives a good sense of the tone once it gets going too. Or, you know, again, you can just throw it on. It's on YouTube. Like that's why I like talking it up right now, where I'm just like, you can go watch it. You don't even have to steal it.
I could, but if I show my kids an episode of this and they like it and they say, let's keep watching it, I'll be like, there aren't any more. They will murder me.
Shoes. All shows must be ready to watch from beginning to end.
This is the world that they live in.
Yep.
Like, nope, there's no more right now. I don't know for when more are coming out. What? Dad, why would you do that to us?
Yeah, this one would be extra harsh because it's not like they're coming out weekly. It's
when they're done.
Right. When they're done.
Yeah.
Yep.
What was that Netflix show? It was like some kind of like a spooky amusement park thing. Dead End Paranormal Park. That's what it was called.
Oh, I saw that pop up on my thing. I didn't know what it was.
Yeah. There was like one season of it, I want to say. I don't know. There was two seasons and Richard loved it. And then it got canceled. And it was like the first instance of him being heartbroken by it. They're just like there was room for more show.
Yep.
But then they said there's going to be no more show. Yep. Like, yeah, like the story wasn't wrapped. The story wasn't done. And it's just like, no, you're never going to find out.
Oh, what a life lesson.
Yep.
I know. And Netflix is obviously infamous for that. Two seasons, especially.
Yeah.
Any other watchy stuff, or you want to move to games? Shush.
Yeah. Game time.
Yeah, I got nothing.
At least, yeah. Let's run through here. Well, Dave, you finished Expedition 33.
I can't believe it's been so long since we recorded a podcast.
Let me say, it was August that we last recorded. And if you told me then, like, yeah, the two big games you're going to be talking about next time you record are Silk Song and Hades 2, I would have been like, oh my God, why didn't we get to record the rest of the year? Like,
right.
Why did we not record until sometime in 2026? Not that both those games would have just come out 3 weeks away from each other and you didn't know any of that until the end of August and then like the middle of September, respectively.
We fully live in also the world.
And also Protoman Act 3 is coming out.
And so, also.
Like, yes. Oh my God.
Just
with animation, I was so impressed with that Hades 2 trailer, the cutscene, like, it looks so, so good. Yeah. Can't wait for the soundtrack.
I had to kind of reach back to, because, I mean, August seems and feels very far away for me right now.
Yes, my God.
I was kind of like having to think back to like what exactly I was doing. But yeah, you finished Expedition 33.
I finished Expedition 33, and I don't have much to say about it because there's nothing about the ending that changed my opinion of the game at all. It was beautiful. It was wonderful. I YouTubed the other ending too, just to be, and I think they're both. I love that is a game that does not give you an easy, happy Pat ending, no matter what happens.
I'm really, really hoping that goes on. Once that goes on, like a Black Friday or a something sale, I would love to be able to join into this by the end of the year discussion.
Yeah. I'm telling everyone about this game. Basically everyone at the show who I know plays games and has any sort of passing interest in voice acting, because sort of in the theater world, everyone knows, Dave's the voice actor guy. He's the guy that gets to do video games now and then. So whenever, you know, when I have the chance to tell people what has impressed me the most lately, I'm like, oh my God, this game, Clair Obscur Expedition 33, has the best voice acting that I maybe have ever heard in a video game. And that is largely because it has one of the best scripts I've ever heard in a video game. And when you start with a good script and then give it to amazing actors, that's the recipe for pure magic, because so many scripts in the voice acting, you know, in the video games that we get, if they are not localized and thus have the sort of awkwardness of inherently being a localization, and an actor has to wrap their lips and brains around that, then they are just sort of positioned in the, I guess, comic book patter snark style of script is so easy to let it write itself. This is a much more difficult thing. This is a, you know, very much a world building script that also feels natural and that lets the characters in the game express themselves in a naturalistic way that doesn't feel overly expository. We never have to pause and be like, this is a magical device that does XYZ. No, they just talk about it like they know what it is, because they do, because it's a part of their lives. It's all so naturalistic, and it's the way I wish every game could be, because it's so good.
Yeah, well, they establish that, you know, all these characters already know each other.
Yeah.
Good. You know, God, I stress that so much with fucking everything I do. It's so important.
With the exception of you know, the characters that you are meeting along the way.
Yeah, obviously. Of course.
Like
you need a naive
base of characters. They all know each other already, and they've known each other for years. And there is knowledge about the world that has been accrued for almost a century now. By other expeditions that, you know, they find, they have information, they have knowledge. So that it's like, it's just like, it's just things like when you go out and you find like handholds in an area and they're like, oh, this was from expedition. And I'm not joking. Expedition 69. They like, that was like their, you know, cause each expedition had like, its kind of like thesis for like the best way to explore the world or do what. You know, and this was the climbing expedition. So, like, there's anything you see that involves, this is why there's climbing stuff in places you'd never think it should be. It's because of that expedition trying to explore the world.
Not only does the world have that internal logic, but also they never hit you over the head with it. You know, a lot of that stuff is either optional things that you can find, or they just, it's stuff that they say in passing, and the writing is elegant and brisk. They communicate just the information they need to. They make it sound naturalistic, as if it's a normal conversation. It's not overly expository. It just sounds like real people.
It's like if it was in like an anime game, it would be like, oh, these must be from that expedition. Oh, what does that mean? Well, this expedition did this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then some other character chimes in. It's like, oh, so whenever we see these, we can thank this expedition. And it's, you know, five, yeah. six more lines than it uh-huh. needs to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marvel TV show episode 4.
Yeah.
Dave losing his mind over there.
God.
I'm curious if you ever, like, it's not going to be as eloquent, but like, I've never finished it, but the best voice acting I think I've heard is Disco Elysium at this point, which is a very good script. I was having the thought earlier, similar with like Baldur's Gate, where I'm just like, man, I wish there was a mod that would just take Western PC style RPGs and let me do the gameplay as a JRPG, because I will always drop off of these isometric games.
Yeah.
No matter how well they're done, it's just not my style.
That's my biggest hesitation to diving into Baldur's Gate 3 is that I'm sure I'm going to love the world, the characters, the writing, the acting. I just don't know if I'm going to enjoy playing it.
Sure helps if you've played a lot of 5th edition before you go into that game.
I'm sure it
does. I've only played 4.5, yeah. I think.
Yeah, that's the thing, yeah, because 4 was... Well, 4... D&D 4th edition was basically, like, adapted video game kind of mechanics into the tabletop, and then 5th took it back, but then Baldur's Gate adapts 5th edition back into a video game. So it's like, yeah, if you're already aware of all the options and, like, rules... And so, and it's not exactly the same, but still, it's like if you have played 5th edition like any amount, you're like, oh, okay, you're already way ahead of someone who has not played any tabletop, going in and trying to be like, well, wait, why is this happening? Why can they attack me? Why is this missing? Why is this doing no damage? What the fuck is happening?
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. I don't know if I like it, but it's so interesting.
It was still challenging for me early on, still just like wrapping my head around like everything. Mm-hmm. And like those, up until you get like level 5 in Baldur's Gate 3, that game can be really fucking hard. And it can be hard later too, but like... Mm-hmm. Once you're level 5, then you get some more options in it. But still, that game will get you. It'll get you.
I was looking because I was like, we have a Baldur's Gate 3 thing coming up this week, and I'm like, should I try the 2-hour trial? No, I would just make a character for 2 hours. I'm not even going to play the game.
You might get out of the tutorial, maybe.
Yep.
my final analysis of Expedition 33, I'm not saying that a better game won't come out before the end of the year, but I don't see myself getting the chance to play any other game that will make as much of an impression on me as Expedition 33 did.
Very cool.
I mean, it's turning into a year of many, many phenomenal games. But I think it's hard to knock that off its pedestal for, you know, we'll get into some of those some of those other games soon. Yeah. But
well, I was gonna say, like for the only I was ready for Mina the Hollower to be my like easy you know, and that just got delayed a bit. So I don't know if it'll make it into. Yeah, that was that last email was they delayed it because it was going to be Halloween. It was today.
Yeah,
that's a bummer. Was the emails today?
Yeah,
Jesus.
It was either today or yesterday.
No, it was today.
They didn't give a date.
Say 4:10 p.m.
I mean, take as long as you want. Make it a good game. But I was just, you know, I don't know if I've played anything technically that's come out this year yet.
Well, some playdate PS5,
there's the
Astro Boy.
Or I'm playing a lot. Yeah, Playroom, not Astrobot. That's another one when it goes on sale. Now, plenty of you know, like I went and played a bunch of demos, various degrees. Resident Evil 4. I was just very curious about, and it has a setting for motion sickness. I'm like, great. And even still, I'm like. Well, it's that, but between that and just like, I'm glad that it's different than Resident Evil 4, but I like the more arcade-y feel than the more realistic feel, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
when I was playing that, I kind of had a note for Dave, you'll appreciate it. You know, like, especially when you step away from games for a while, like the games that are just not written as well, man, I have a low tolerance for at this point. Like, just like Pipistrello, even the new Shinobi, like there's just things in it that I'm just like, I can't deal with it. It feels
like a waste of my time. But
yeah, it's just like, if I don't enjoy this dialogue, just get it out of there.
Oh, man. That would make me feel so bad. When I reviewed things regularly for SML, and, you know, which I was one of the great things about doing reviews and just kind of taking on games that you would never think of playing and just kind of stuff you're going into blind, is you kind of learn what you like and don't like very quickly, especially when you're reviewing these things, like, you know, like I got to do this next week. And it's just like, there's so many games where I just felt like, man, I'm so sorry for all the thought you put into the story and characters and world of this game. I don't give a shit. I just don't like that. You know, it could be handled. It's like that NES manual formula of like, here is a paragraph that explains the story and some of the characters, and I'm good. Not that there, you know, there's plenty of games that I'll wade through, you know, more talky talk dialogue, but I just, there is such a line, and it's like, it's right past where like Persona is, really. Like Persona is where that line exists, like, because those games are very talky. But there's you go a couple steps past that and you get to like anime portraits with, you know, kind of voice, you know, voice acting and writing that is just not very good. And there's
I was going to say, you can see the difference between Persona and the Arc System Persona fighting game dialogue. Yeah. Like if you go into the story mode, like
say the difference between Disgaea 1 and like Disgaea like 3, 4, 5.
Oh yeah. You know? Oh my God. Yeah, they're very guilty of that. I only had like two that I've really played so far. Well, I just signed up for PlayStation Plus literally before this because this month they're doing Alan Wake 2 and Cocoon. Awesome. So I want to play both of those.
Yeah, that's cool.
But Astro's Playroom, that ruled. That's like, not only did that rule, it was really cool putting myself in the headspace of that coming out in 2020 and just being heads and tails better than every other game that came out. I'm like, yeah, this is like, I didn't love the Monkey Ball Marble Madness stages of that one as much as the ball control.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I figured, like, there was something, well, because you're like flick, flick, flick instead of like moving it, but it did have an insta stop, which I really appreciate because a lot of those games don't. In general, my feel of like this as catching up with like two generations is like the biggest advance is the haptic feedback. Like graphics are graphics, but like that feels like a huge generational difference.
Yeah. And not enough games really make use of that. And the ones that do it well, it's like, it feels really good. But yeah, graphics got probably about as good as they needed to get like 10 years ago. Yep. With like Witcher 3.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's still, it's, yeah.
Yeah, it's incremental. Appreciate all that stuff.
What level of plus did you get? Just like the base one, or did you get one of the higher ones?
I got extra. Yeah, I got the middle.
That's the middle one. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I think that gets you most of like the more moderns. I feel like the top level is where like the really old stuff lives, which, you know, you don't need that. That's not what you're here for as much.
But, exactly. Yeah. No, I went through and downloaded a bunch of stuff that I haven't gotten to. I played a half hour of Ghost of Tsushima like a half hour ago. And like it got to a sneaking point and I went like, all right. But I'll be messing around with like the modern ones just to see modern gaming more than anything, you know, like I know the Ragnarok is on there and other, which isn't like, is 2-3 years old, but like,
yeah, well, you'd want to play the first, God of War anyways, before that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
I also like I think the second one got too out of scope for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. At this, you know, I'm not sure which one of the modern games is going to grab me as much, honestly, because that style is still, you know, the aggro AAA game just is not my normal thing. That's why I wasn't into the consoles for so long in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Spider-Man, that's
that is downloaded.
One to check out.
Yeah, I got I went right to Miles. I figured I would just, if I'm going to try it out.
Okay. Yeah.
I wasn't sure which would be the right choice, but I'm like, well, I like Miles more right now anyways.
Yeah, I think that's, well, Miles is also a smaller game, so.
Oh, good. I like that.
Yeah, it's shorter.
Yeah.
By, you know, there's just less stuff in it.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's actually kind of a good place to start. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I played Control, and I have beaten Control at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got mixed feelings on that one, honestly. I mean, like, it's a lot of good stuff. Also, it got too hard for me, and I put it down to one-hit kills and immortality for the last three chapters, because I was just like, I want to see how it finishes. I'm glad it had that option.
That's good. Yeah. I love that games have that stuff these days.
Yeah.
When you just want to see it through.
Right. Because I almost went to YouTube, and I'm like, wait, let me go through the options. But, yeah, I just thought it was paced really weirdly because, like, I couldn't upgrade my stuff very well until, like, maybe a little beyond halfway. Then there's all of these side missions, and I'm like, well, I'm already kind of past this. Like, sorry, guys, if this was in the first half, I would have gone into those. Certain parts were, like, way too hard, and also I couldn't really figure out how to make levitation work well in combat, where I'm just sort of like, well, the idea is to kind of like keep moving and to kind of get cover every once in a while, and if I'm in the air not really,
yeah, you have to act like kind of really fast target. In the air to like,
yeah,
you know, throw stuff around and shoot this guy and slam and it takes some work to do
something. And I never, I was like, I powered my, you know, throw, you know, my lift to the max because it's fun to throw things. And it was goofy fun to like pick something up and knock somebody over and then pick them up and throw them at somebody. Like, that was a good time.
Yeah. No, I thought that game, you know, I played through it twice because I think I played through the, I think when I got a PS5, it had like a, you know, free upgrade for the, or maybe it was on Plus. I want to say,
yeah, it's like, on Plus.
You know what? I'm going to play through this game again and just have a blast because it's a lot of fun to play and it looks really cool. And then, yeah, there's just parts where I'm just like, how the fuck do I get to this part of the building?
And like, I had to look up way too much stuff. And I think like that was annoying me. Like
sometimes like looking at you have to like look at the signs on like the wall and kind of try to figure it out from there. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, there's so many side quests and they're all cool, but there's a lot of them and you can really easily end up treading water. And it's, I feel like I remember the end being kind of a son of a bitch towards the end, like after the ashtray maze, which is awesome.
That was awesome. I wish I wasn't like kind of at the spot. I wish I had kind of pushed myself to at least get through that point like beforehand. But I mean, like, obviously, you know, that is the best part of the game. That's why you're playing the game. I'm glad I didn't have that ruined beforehand. But yeah, I mean, Remedy's really, you know, it's satisfying to like to shoot things. I think my thing was like when I'm presented with multiple guns, I'm going to pick the one that works best, and that's the one I'm going to use, even if you try and tempt me with other things. Mm-hmm. So like, I used the same guns for like the entire time for the most part and didn't get to upgrade, like got to upgrade one of them and not the other one for the most part. So like, I didn't get the fun of like mix and matching with the mods. Oh. And like most of the time with the mods, like they were so outdated, like I was just selling stuff almost any time I picked something up.
Okay.
And losing enough money when I was dying. So it was like, like that whole cycle is just kind of annoying to like find a nice rhythm on like the upgrade side. But I mean, like the fun of it is the like the writing and the Sam Lake stuff in general, obviously, is just a hoot. I think I just had it in my head that it was a little more like Hideo, like beforehand. Okay. When it was described, like it was going to be messing with you a little more. Mm-hmm. And there was kind of the way it was set up at the beginning, I was like, ooh, this feels like Eternal Darkness. This is like, I thought it was going to be, it's Jesse is walking around. And I thought it was kind of breaking into chapters in a way where I'm just like, oh, this is our hub. And then we're kind of like going off and then we're coming back, which was interesting.
Might have been better if it was broken up like that. So it was a little more focused.
Right? Yeah. But again, you know, like it was really cool. Like learning the system and how like modern shooters work.
Kind of, you know what is broken up like that? Alan Wake 2.
All right. I heard that there was some chapterage, but
you can still go like run around the areas, but I think it's a lot more focused on what you got to do from moment to moment.
And ultimately I like Alan Wake a lot more. I think that was going to be a gimme anyways. I don't like brutalist architecture and just being in a building that long and looking at white walls.
Yeah.
So like when we're breaking out of it was nice in ways, but, yeah, I'm glad I played it. It was a fun, like, pseudo-secondary tutorial from Astros. Mm-hmm. Kind of the two ends of the PlayStation spectrum at this point.
Yeah.
But, yeah, next will be Wake 2 or Cocoon. We'll probably test out a bunch of stuff and see what feels good that I can, like, power through. But
How cool to just unlock the gates to, like, 10 years of video games.
Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot. There's also, like, it's weird because there's a lot and there's not a lot where I'm just like, I have my list of, like, games and I'm just like, yeah, that's a lot of stuff to catch up on. But also, oh, okay, now that it's written down, I'm just like, okay, those are the beats.
Yeah.
Those are the hot beats. I can hit some of those.
Yeah.
And I still need the weirder stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Astrobots. I could totally see the parallels that we were talking about between like Galaxy and Astro, where I'm just like, yep, that makes a lot of sense. That is the style that is like my favorite type of 3D platformer is whatever those two are doing.
Just being crazy as shit all the time. So
yeah,
much
crazy as shit. Not too sandboxy, not too open for me. So I know, and both have at least playroom. Both have a hub world to go back to as well. Helps.
Yeah. So is man. Yeah. Astrobot's got a hell of a hub. Oh man. Yeah. All right. So let's run down here. Things that happened like a month ago. I did finish DK Bonanza. I had to push myself kind of a bit. The end of that, the last, you know, few hours of that game were really good. I was kind of like losing steam because it just keeps, I could have done probably without like a few large areas there at a certain point. And some of them are optional. Like there's places where it's literally, you can go this way or this way, but I'm like, well, I got to go back the other way. Cause there's another animal power over there, but there's just a lot in that game. But you know, I'll go back to it at some point, but it was just kind of like, kind of had to just put my head down and go at a certain point, or I was like, I'm never going to finish it. Death Stranding, I'm going to come back to. I got to a point. I think I'm just going into like act three of the game. I was just like, this will not withstand Silksong coming out. So I'm going to leave it here and walk away. But
If I keep a PlayStation Plus that is also on there so I can actually join you in that journey.
Yeah, it's a. I've heard that 2 is very good.
Yeah.
It addresses a lot of the issues of 1, but like, yeah, 1's a weird, boring infrastructure delivery game with like just the most insane, strange shit going on.
Into it.
Yeah.
At least in theory. Yeah,
the story is wild. That to me is, you know, is the best part. The stealth is the worst part. The kind of trying to figure out how to efficiently traverse the land safely is interesting and rewarding. And it still seems like there's a bunch of people playing it because there is that kind of asynchronous. You see other people's like structures and you can pick up their equipment they leave behind and such. Also on the Hideo front, I played just the virtuous mission of Metal Gear Solid Delta.
There's been some opinions there.
Yeah.
On Delta. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess I'm not that far. I mean, once I started playing it, I'm like, man, this game's awesome. I love this game.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I mean, like, the one I was agreeing with, at least in theory, is just like the, like, you know, Snake Eater was so good as like representing like what the software was at the time. So just kind of the unnecessariness of it being ported. I don't know. Like it was, there was also like when they were enhancing some of the visuals, there was a not kind comparison to the way that they did Wizard of Oz on the sphere, where you're just sort of like, yeah, you didn't need to do that.
No one asked for this
sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it's also Snake Eater.
Yeah.
It's also Snake Eater.
And perfectly.
Snake Eater is awesome.
Yeah.
So, and there is like, you know, the modernization of it that makes it more playable with, you know, a modern control scheme just makes it feel right as a video game.
Like, I don't know. Those controls were wrong in the perfect way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But it's been, you know, 20 years at this point. So I'm like, you know, a lot of times I go back to PS2 games and I pick up the controller and I'm like, oh shit, this doesn't feel right at all. And I go to change it. I'm like, oh shit, we don't have these options anymore at this time. So, you know, I think it's, I'll get back to it at some point. I mean, I think Richard wants to watch me play more of it. Cause I said something about going back to it. He's like, yeah, you need to play more of it, Dad.
right.
But, at some point I never allot myself time to play games on the TV anymore, unless it's like Expedition 33, apparently. Silk Song came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Whoa.
game for you and a lot of years. People.
Yeah, a lot of people. And that's like one of the crazy things. And like, yeah, Dave, you're not off the hook. If you beat Hollow Knight, you can beat Silk Song.
I did not beat Hollow Knight.
Oh, you didn't beat Hollow Knight. I love Hollow Knight.
I got to a point in Hollow Knight where I don't think it's that it was too hard, but I think I got to a point where I got lost. Like I was going all around and like, I don't know how to go forward. I don't know how to press on. And I have now backtracked so far that I'm having trouble getting back to the furthest point that I got. Sure. And I don't know how to describe where I am in order to look this up in a spoiler-free way. So I kind of feel a little fucked. It was not the game's fault. It was the way that I tackled the issue, you know, like it was that I kind of fucked myself over. And by that time, and then, you know, something else came up in my life and I couldn't devote any more time to it. And I never went back. So that's not Hollow Knight's fault. I definitely do not fault the game for it. Hollow Knight is a game that never felt unfair in its challenge. Whereas I'm hearing from some people that maybe Silk Song might be a little unfair.
I don't know. I don't feel that way.
Okay.
You've heard similar, but also I am similarly sensitive to, like, if I hear that a game is hard, I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah, no, I don't think Weiss would fare well in
that.
Well, one of the things with both Hollow Knight and Silk Song is that, like, it doesn't give you maps. Like, you have to work for the maps. And if you don't have a map, you're fucking lost.
Yeah, exactly.
There was like
that's worse to me.
I'm getting towards the end of Silk Song, and there was one area I didn't have a map for because the map guy was there and I didn't have any money at the time to buy the map. And then she moved on. It's a bug. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Moved on.
Yeah.
And I didn't run into them again for like hours. So whenever I had to go through that area, I'm just like, I have fucking no clue. I'm just kind of feeling my way through here. And like, they play a lot with like you being in tight, dark spaces where it's kind of, you don't see the whole room on the screen. So it's tough to.
Right.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, it's
definitely not
part,
for me,
but it's also part of setting the mood of Hollow Knight and that it is harkening back to kind of that oppressive, lonely feel of, you know, Metroid and shit and like where the genre first started. And
it does that so well.
There's games, most games do not do it better.
Yeah.
It is mm-hmm. it is so good at setting the mood of the place in, like, you know, instilling a little bit of like fear mm-hmm. in you as you're going, because you're literally afraid of dying, like, because you mm-hmm. don't know where you are and necessarily how you will get back to your stuff. Like, eventually you will learn, you will find the maps, you will kind of like learn the areas, you will get the gist of like going back, but you know, sometimes you're way out there and you're just like, God, I can't fucking die right now. and you might. And, you know, it can be harsh. Like the earliest Souls games were, like, it has some rough runbacks sometimes, to some rough runs to bosses. They can be frustrating if you're grinding yep. a boss. See, that mm-hmm. this is just me, but from playing those games for, you know, so long, it really, you have to go back to like Demon Souls or Dark Souls 1. By Dark Souls 2, they were just plopping a bonfire right outside of a boss, and they were like, just here you go. But I remember doing those runs, and it was hardest in Demon Souls because you'd basically be running through the entire stage. But at a certain point, like Dark Souls, like I would use that time, like I'm kind of like, I'm running back, but I'm thinking in my head like what I have to do different. So I take it as kind of like a welcome like brain break to reset when trying to get past a boss. And there are bosses that are difficult, but like many of them have, I end up in this very common situation where it's like, I'm kind of, you know, I grind against a boss like a half dozen times. And by the time I get to the run where I beat the boss, it's not like this, you know, super close battle where I barely squeak by. It's like, I'm not even getting fucking hit. Cause it's just like, I'm in there and I'm like, oh, I can just read all of its moves in the pattern now. And just like this boss doesn't work on me anymore. And it feels awesome.
Yeah.
And that's why it feels like fair and not like cheap bullshit. Like, even if you think the screen is full of cheap bullshit, it's like, eventually it's like, okay, I'm going to look for the cues, like these projectiles going over here. And I know they're going to do three moves here. They're going to throw three rounds of projectiles at me. I know I can stand here, dodge this one. This one's going to come over now. And then this is going to happen. And, you know, it just doesn't hit you. And you're just like, oh, whatever.
I know exactly the feeling that you're describing. Well describing. That's that feeling of all of a sudden. Yeah. You see the lines of code in the matrix.
Yeah, exactly.
But to me,
that's a sign that, you know, these are bosses with well-designed patterns that you can read and get used to, and it might take you some tries, but you can overcome it.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, people shouldn't be too scared. I mean, I know some people just don't like hard games, and I think there is a conversation to be had about how, like, you have a life bar of like with like 5 pips on it to start, and everything does like 2 pips worth of damage. It's like, what the fuck, dog? Like,
right.
You only take like 1 damage if you like bump into an enemy, and then you feel like you shouldn't be taking damage anyway. So it's like, oh, you can take like 3 hits, that even though you have 5 things of health, like that's a little harsh. And it's a long time before you can like upgrade your weapon in the game. I actually think I maybe didn't realize I could have done it for like a good number of hours, because by the time I was able to upgrade it, I was able to do it twice in a row, and there's 3 upgrades in the game. So
made a big leap.
Yeah, things got way easier after that. But there's so many nooks and crannies and weird stuff to discover, and it's a huge big world. Like, I'm over 30 hours in the game now. It's awesome. Like, in the same ways that Hollow Knight was awesome, but
yeah, I mean, that's what Hollow Knight did really well, is that not only just that sense of loneliness, but also that sense of like, this feels, the internal consistency of this world feels real. And so there's always this enticement to see what is around the next corner, because it's going to be something unique and weird in the same way that the best Metroid games are.
Oh, that's a good way to put that.
Yeah, and I feel like Silksong gives you, like, I mean, literally gives you a lot more tools than Hollow Knight did. In that you have different sword styles. You have tons of different sub-weapons you can equip. You have, you know, it does have amulets like Hollow Knight did. I don't think you have quite as much room for equipping them as you did in Hollow Knight, because it gives you other things at the same time and other special moves. But, like, yeah, there's just like so much you can do with it. And it's like, you'll find the pogoing still feels fantastic. So, yeah, no, it's awesome. It's really good. And then, yeah, and then Hades fucking 2 came out.
Another one that, I mean, at this point, obviously, my Black Friday list is a, a growing, but, like, man, I'm excited for, even, you know, like, I really like Hades, but I didn't know how excited I would be for a sequel until I realized how different, that it wasn't, like, following the same character, that it's doing, like, very... It might as well be called something else. It's just happens to also be the same themes and so
forth. Well, it's a direct sequel. You are like the character you're playing is Zagreus' sister. Yeah. Basically, the premise is that Kronos has overthrown the House of Hades. And you know, you were the sister. You were pulled away by the witch to train in secret to go back and overthrow Kronos. But there's more going on to it than that. It's not even a, like, you do your first run, you go back to the hub world, and like there's the stairs that say go down, and then there's also stairs that say go up. So like there's, I'm guessing there's like literally double the game of Hades 1, in that yes, you go down. So yeah, in Hades 1, you're fighting out from the House of Hades, and you're trying to fight down to the House of Hades in 2.
Yeah, I was getting that implication.
I don't know if I was going to go from there. No idea.
And even, there's so much of the first Hades that I never saw. I mean, I beat the game, but I didn't do everything. Enormous.
Yeah, so I mean, actually, I was kind of struggling my first few runs. Because I just was still trying to play the game like Hades 1 and not taking advantage of what makes it Hades 2. Like they give you a whole magic bar in this game that you have to manage to do, you know, magical attacks and stuff. There's different gods giving you boons. There's other upgrades and materials to collect and manage and just other stuff to think about. And some of the same stuff to think about. Dave's got a cat situation.
I do too, but she's just bumping over.
All right, yeah, come just to watch. Sorry, I'm just gonna watch the cat. Just I know. Knock
it
Dave
looked like
the stairs.
cat was gonna hop in the chair, and then Dave was gonna go up and down the stairs in the background. They were just gonna swap for a bit.
Yeah. Oh, animals trying to figure out what they want.
I just want to make sure she wasn't trapped down here. No. She's not. She's just hanging out.
Yeah, she's been going back and forth a lot. Supergiant
has done it again and made one of their games that are just generally usually pretty awesome. I think the pick the right one to do a sequel to at this point.
There was no question on that, I think, at this point.
Yeah, it's great. Hard to put that game down. Hard to stop playing it. Yeah, I had my
new
first
Darren
run.
Korb music.
Yeah, I had my first run that made it to Kronos last night, and failed obviously horribly. But then it's like, ooh, now I have all this other stuff I can, you know, I got a big pile of shit I can unlock from that run, and it seems like another excellent game, and just like, you know, these. They're not going to, I don't think either one of them are going to top Expedition 33 in the game of the year conversation, but they're certainly top 10 or games.
Right. I mean, they still might be a best of generation when you look back, it just might happen all in 1 year, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just, you know, they're if nothing hamstrung because they are standing on the shoulders of giants, you know,
right.
To previous games of the year, in my opinion. So,
Tim, I forget. Have you tried the new Ninja Gaiden Ragebound, the 2D one?
Yeah, I finished it. Yep. Oh, you did? I reviewed it for Smil.
I thought so. Maybe.
I talked about it last time on this podcast.
Okay. I couldn't remember. Forgive me.
Yeah. No, it was good.
That's a good video game.
Yeah, it is a good video game. Yeah. I guess the general sentiment I'm hearing is that Shinobi is a better game, but they are different enough that people should play both of them.
I hadn't heard that about. Okay.
They both have demos. Yeah, I've heard a lot of really good things about Shinobi. I was going to actually pick up Shinobi, and then Silk Song got a release date, and I put a hold on that. And then, like, and then I was thinking of picking up Shinobi just to have something to play counter to Silk Song, and then Hades 2 got a release date. So it's just, sorry, Shinobi's just been getting run over by other stuff, but.
Okay, I feel like
I think
I
the
had
best thing.
Of,
oh, go ahead.
I just feel like I had heard kind of the reverse, that Ninja Gaiden was the superior game, but they were different enough that there's room for both.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news, that's even better to me if you're hearing both opinions.
Yeah.
They're just both being held in high regard.
Yeah.
So
Weiss, I'm sorry I cut you off.
Oh no, we're on Zoom. I mean, I played the Shinobi demo and it was good. I will say the best thing it did is made me want to play Streets of Rage 4 because I haven't played that. Because it kind of demonstrated that I was like, I didn't get a good enough feel for the visuals of Streets of Rage 4 just from what was put online. I felt like in action, it looked much better in both cases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was good. It wasn't enough of a hook to make me want to buy the game per se. But if it shows up on a PlayStation Plus or a whatever.
Well, I will have to demo them both. Well, it's just today, two of my Deku Deals wish list games went down to just about $20, Ragebound and Weiss's aforementioned Ghost of Tsushima.
Goats of Tsushima.
Goats of Tsushima.
Those goats.
It's late, folks.
Yeah.
For us.
So I'm thinking about picking up.
Oh, has Mega 64 done Goats of Tsushima?
Oh, man.
It writes itself.
I mean, it's right there.
It's right there.
Yeah.
It's low-hanging fruit.
I played like a little bit of Tsushima like a couple years ago. You know, it was stupid to even. I remember I played it before some other big game I wanted to play was coming out.
Oh, sure.
And I was like, why am I even doing this right now?
This is not the time.
No, it was not the time. But a lot of people really love that game.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, like it seems right.
Yeah, I don't think I paid much more than that for it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And that was, I do remember it was cool because when you put that into a PS5, there's no difference between performance and fidelity mode because it just runs at 60 frames per second. Like have tuned those games very, very well. Oh, so
never mind.
Yeah.
It's sold out at that $20 price point. I can delete that email. That was quick.
I just remembered that Cosmic Invasion, Marvel Cosmic Invasion, still coming out this year.
Yeah,
that's the new tribute.
Yeah, that looks real good.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was tribute for a long time, but then I did, and I put it on the wish list now.
Ninja Gaiden is only $20 on Xbox. This is not a Steam sale price.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
New Scott Pilgrim this year, or is that going to be next year? That's probably
next year. Yeah, when they have a game coming out in the next couple months.
Yeah, that's why I was like, that would be silly.
We're running out of track for.
Yeah,
games to be coming out in 2025, yet they still
The Netflix Scott Pilgrim is getting a Blu-ray release with like commentaries on every episode and shit.
Oh, that's
I'm happy
great.
About that because they were trying hard to get that made apparently. So
that's
for
really
2 years.
Cool. Okay. Oh, cool. All right. Well, I'm gonna say that's a podcast. I'm
that could be it right there, boys.
Yeah. Somehow we still stretch it out to 2 hours. Yeah, don't get much to talk about.
I was going to say, I won't be having as much to talk about on any episode for the next few years. Okay. I think that's the most I've had.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, now you got PS5.
PS5.
We'll see when the next one pops out. Maybe it'll be an early November deal. Maybe we can do like an early November, a late November, and then the blank of the year in December. We'll see.
Yeah,
we'll figure that out.
Yeah,
this is definitely the year when I've played fewer games than any of the past few years because just playing
good stuff.
Yeah, I've been playing good stuff. Mm. Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like I sense bad stuff now, and I'm like, no.
Yeah, that's no good. Time for
that. Healthy. Don't got time for bad stuff.
Like
it
that.
Is healthy, and it's being okay with, you know, putting down games when you're
yeah,
when you're right. done with them.
We're putting them on Immortality. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
One hit kills no mortality.
That's gonna do it. We'll catch y'all next month.
Boy, we've really brought this down to a soft NPR.
I know.
Level here.
This is so nice. Yeah.
Oh, we're tired. All right. Good night, everybody.